Are we waiting for the technician? Okay, he is busy, so it can be on shortly.
How long?
Members, while we're waiting, can I just put some thoughts to you? Next week we are due to have public hearings on the post office bill and the post bank bill. We had placed advertisements in the newspapers, and to date I think we have got four submissions from different parties, well, individuals and organizations. Now, certainly we can't sustain four submissions for 2 days of public hearings. So the first proposal I want members to consider is that we go ahead with the hearings on Tuesday morning, and we get the four submissions. I know that National Treasury has also requested that they would want to come and talk to us about this matter. So we schedule that for Tuesday morning, and we finish up the public hearings on Tuesday. That is the first proposal. The second thing is this, that in our strategic session, if you remember, members had called for some training on the ECA Act, on the Act itself. We have secured a speaker through the office of Professor Alison Gilwell. I'm forgetting the name of the person that she is posing. And she is available to meet with us on Wednesday morning. She's got a very, very tight program, but she can do this training on Wednesday morning from 9 o'clock till about lunchtime. But it means we have to go to the campus where we were the last time. So that's the second proposal. I need confirmation from members on that, and then I can get them to make the arrangements. So can I invite some comments on both those proposals? Nikki?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think from our side it's absolutely fine, and we will we'll go along with the plans you made.
Thank you very much. Julie?
Chairperson, I just wanted to ask if you are aware that we have the President in a special question session next week, Wednesday morning, 10:30 to 12:30. The program has been changed from question session tomorrow afternoon to next week Wednesday morning. Just so that.
Okay. And what is in the program Wednesday afternoon?
I beg your pardon, Chairperson.
Oh, there's extended public committees on Wednesday afternoon.
That's correct.
So what do we do? What? Mr. Kulwani. It's nice.
I also can't make it the morning. I've got a question to the President on that day.
No, we won't get permission in any event.
Mr. Chair, did you not say he was available or she was available the whole of next week and we just had to pick one of the days, or was it only Wednesday?
No, see, I think she's a foreign guest and she's got her own program that they've organized for her. So the slot that you know I thought was open for us was just this Wednesday morning because of this public hearing that might not take place. But now, if the President is responding, then that slot is closed. What is on the program Tuesday afternoon? Do we know? Also extended public committee. Can we find a way of... You see, I think the difficulty is if we're going to formally apply for permission, then it's not going to be approved. Then we have to make an informal arrangement.
See, what about not making formal arrangements, which run the risk of not being granted? But let us then say, as a portfolio, we will report to the EPCs and thereafter meet at maybe 2:30 or 3 for this specific session.
And then work sort of a little bit into the evening.
That's right.
Mr. Kulwani? Can you help me? You're the whip here. You don't mind evening. All right. So can I go back to them and say, round about 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, working into the evening? But I want members to be present. I mean, if we're making the arrangement, I don't want the people to disappear and then there are 2 or 3 of us left. It doesn't look good. So it must be at least the bulk of the members. All right, so I'll try and work on Wednesday around about 3 o'clock. Okay? Now, thank you very much. Then, Centec, provisionally we got them for Tuesday afternoon, depending on whether we get permission or not. We did not get permission. But it's from 2 to 4. But we can get Centec from 4 onwards. So we're looking at Centec provisionally for on Tuesday afternoon from 4 o'clock to 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Right? Okay, so all this will be confirmed in writing at the committee section. South African Post Office, those are housekeeping arrangements. But I think the first one does concern you, that the hearings then might be streamlined quite substantially, because the closing date is today. Today is the closing day, so we might get one or two more submissions, but I think only on Tuesday morning we will work through the hearings. Members, then may I take the opportunity of welcoming the Post Office team, the chairperson and the CEO. You have to submit the strategic plans to us. I don't know if you were here, anybody was present in the last week's session that we've had with different entities. You are mindful of the fact that there's a new act in place, and that Parliament is trying to pilot the new Act, and that the requirements have altered somewhat. While not formally from a National Treasury perspective, but from our side we do feel that we want a bit more details per program in terms of the budgetary allocation so that we are able to make a sensible and rational decision about how, you know, money is to be expended and used up at the Post Office. So I think you've got the background. I don't have to give a long speech about it. Welcome to the team. And we're going to hand over to you then.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Communications Portfolio Committee. It is indeed a great pleasure for us as the South African Post Office family to present to you this morning our plan and budget. I would like to start by indicating, Honourable Chair, that the CEO was here with her team last week and managed to get an understanding of the changes, and she has tried with her team her best to incorporate. So we might not have done the best, but we've tried our best within the short time in terms of accommodating the new changes, and would like some feedback on that. We are making the presentation on behalf of the Post Office myself. The bulk of it, however, I'm just introducing it, is with the CEO and the COO. And the CEO will introduce her team. I'm here as well from the board side with a board member, and Tatema Lebu, who is the one from the board who comes to the portfolio committee meetings with us. I'll just quickly let the CEO introduce the other members before we start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Members. If the Chair allows, because there are quite a number of us, I will just indicate that the entire executive team is here with us today. And I'll introduce the executive directors. And Mr. Nick Buick, our Chief Financial Officer. Ms. Toti Memela Kambule, our MD of Coles Bank and also responsible for the Financial Services Unit. Mr. John Wenzel, our Chief Operating Officer, responsible for the operations unit as a whole. We have also brought our supply chain group executive, who will indicate by hand as I go up. Mr. Malusela Sikasimbe, Mr. Todd Phillip, our Chief Audit Executive. We then have Ms. Marie Lancaster behind me, our Group Executive Strategy. Mr. Maputa Dayal, our Group Executive HR. And behind him we have Ms. Alunga Lelose, who just joined us as a executive, group executive corporate affairs. He's 2 weeks in the job. Ms. Alunga Lelose. And I've missed Mr. Mpelo, our assistant company secretary. And running through we have the different business unit heads. And who are sitting in there? Mr. Ndala Mnisi, our head of consumer services. Mr. Molefe Matibe, our head of logistics. Mr. Yandras Foti, our head of mail business. We have our company secretary, Ms. Betty Bulunga. We then have Ms. Karabo Rapo, who is our group risk and compliance management. Mr. Tix Kripu, who is a familiar face. Our executive running public affairs. And Andrew Nongogo, Mr. Andrew Nongogo, who is in the public affairs arena. That is the executive team that runs the post office. Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Chair, we always make sure that we bring everybody because it makes our lives as a board easier when we all listen and make sure that we are on the same page when we look at our annual priorities. Because following this meeting, we have a joint session between ourselves and the board and the executives where we look at the, you know, feedback and how we structure ourselves going forward. So this meeting is not just about showing our faces, very critical in terms of our strategic execution of the strategy. I'd like to just quickly go through the background information just for us all to understand where we are as a post office. The first slide is basically a reminder in terms of the strategic thrust of the post office from the time that we were commercialized in 1991 to where we are at this point, what we call the era of growth, development and sustainability. It is within this era, next slide, that we have sat down to focus our strategy in terms of the key deliverables and areas that require attention, particularly following problems we experienced in the past, in the recent past. And this realized that consolidation was critical because we saw quite a number of gains within the post office that required consolidation going forward. And this included the IT platform. It also included the business unit consolidation. The other area is around corporatization. It particularly deals with the corporatization of the post bank. As we all know, we're dealing with legislation around that. But it goes further in terms of the broader corporatization of the post office following the route of commercialization. The third one deals with area of corporate citizenship. We also recognize that as a post office, we've had issues of image internally in terms of relationship with staff and externally with the community and public broadly. This ensures that we have specific programs that are targeted at addressing those areas of concern, but also ensuring that we remain a legitimate, credible, and ethical corporate citizen. I'll just briefly touch on the mandate and strategic imperatives from our shareholder. One of the critical areas where we see ourselves and also part of our mandate is the positioning of ourselves as SAPO as a delivery arm of government services. This is a responsibility we take very seriously. It has implications, however, and we'll talk to that later. And also the critical area of delivery to all households on an equitable basis and achieving delivery standards in terms of the target of 95% and increasing public access to postal services with a new address target of 1.6 million per year. And also the increase of access to financial services through the post bank, total human resource management and practices, focusing on diversification, innovation, and growth, meeting the shareholders of space stations in terms of affordability and effective postal service, and internal customer and employee satisfaction for a transformed and productive workforce.
We, however, are facing challenges, and one of the key challenges currently relates to the economic crisis. I believe that if anybody at this age cannot, I mean, put this as a major problem, really, we have to talk to that person, because a bigger threat for us at this point is the issue of the economic crisis. It affects our business. It affects particularly our anchor in terms of the mail. And the CEO and the CFO will talk to that in terms of the decline of the mail volume. The other area relates to human capital development and resource management, competitive nature of the business. We like to emphasize the competitive nature of the business, because whilst we are a parastatal, it is only that parcel up to 1 kilogram that is afforded the protection and monopoly. Every other business we engaged in, from the post bank to logistics, operates in a free market space. We are not protected, and that creates big issues for us. Other areas relate to bridging the digital divide in terms of our customers particularly, and positioning the Southern Post Office within the socio-economic challenges of the country. We see ourselves very much positioned in terms of an enabler for poverty eradication and mainstreaming the poorest in terms of the economy and the expansion of the footprint and innovation. So this year, we see ourselves particularly within the constraints of the economic crisis referred to above, focusing on innovation in these following areas. We believe that if we build an integrated multi-channel network, we'll be able to reach more people faster and efficiently. And this builds on the work and foundation that we've done in terms of the infrastructure, particularly around IT, that already we've invested in. And other areas include the strategic approach to postal services rollout and investments in systems that enable hybrid operations, and the CEO will talk more to these, and these are areas that we've identified as key strategic areas. Where we move from document management to data management and delivery. Remember, we have a document management company as well. And the review of our delivery mechanisms. Human capital is our biggest challenge at this stage, and we are focusing a lot in terms of training our human resource for retention and growth. And lastly, the area of developmental preferential procurement, where we are saying it is not just procurement for the sake of procurement, and we believe that with our stand, we can contribute to changing and transforming of South Africa. Thank you. I hand over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, just to introduce how we are going to try and deal with the requirements that the committee had indicated last week in terms of the presentation. We have included part of the strategic issues, but we'd like to highlight the issues that we'd like the committee to really assist us in. And as we go through the presentation, we will go through some of those issues, but focus much more deeply into the issues that would be required. In terms of our grasp, in terms of what we had learned from last week, is that we need to be able to provide the committee with issues that would stay out of the budget or the allocation that we have within DOC, how is SAPO going to spend that money. But secondly, what are the achievements that we have seen in those issues? And therefore, we'll cover the issues around license obligations, which is the issue that we have left, the legislative process that the chairperson has indicated to, the subsidy and phasing out thereof for the post office, the regulatory issues that we'd like to highlight as far as ICASA is concerned. And we will also deal with the issues of achievements for the post office. Just before I start my presentation, I just want to indicate to honourable members that the border that you see on top there, it is indeed the STEM program that we have as a post office for this year. And in the sequence that we have, and we are proud to say in February we did launch the Taxi Science STEM, which is in fact an innovation for the post office, where it can be filled with a blank, the technology for the blank for them to be able to can read the stamps. It is geared for the 2010 tourist market so that people can be able to know how to stop a taxi and deal with the other issues of the country. But secondly, also we, at the end of this month, we'll also be launching the biodiversity stamp that deals with biodiversity in particular, making sure that we respond to the environment. If I may, then the ones that I will skip over are the ones that the members would have seen quite a lot. Our vision, mission, and value statements, which are very important to us, as we believe this is in fact the fabric of the South African Post Office in terms of all that we do. In terms of the strategy pillars that we have put into, is the corporate strategy, business strategy, the operational strategy, and the support strategy. And may I at this point say, with the board's guidance, in 2 years' time when we put together a strategy and a business model, this is the focus around implementation of that strategy and business model for us to be able to achieve the gains of the post office as we would like to do and in fact deliver on our mandate. Therefore, in terms of the issues that we'd like to focus on is the issue of continuing our corporate strategy and, as the chair has indicated, make sure that innovation, growth and sustainability is attained. And the realignment, I'm happy to say that we have done a lot of the realignment in our business strategy where the business units now have been formed in the three or four business units that we have agreed on. And in terms of the operational strategy, the focus is on service excellence and effectiveness and making sure that we can be able to meet the demands of our customers. And also our shared support service strategy deals with how we have started reorganizing the post office for us to be able to support the business strategies at a cost-effective manner and a very transparent manner. Just to highlight some of the issues that we have looked at in terms of achievements for the business model. It is on track, the implementation is on track. The two positions and units that are going to be formalized as of the 1st of April, it is the compliance, the group compliance office and the business support office that will then be formalized with the advertisements going as per plan from the 1st of April. Improved triple bottom line reporting that we have engaged on and we continue engaged on. The improved focus on corporate governance, and I think the board has done quite a lot in terms of corporate governance, making sure that we deal with that. And under the circumstances, the economic circumstances that we have found ourselves in as a country, robust cost management and making sure that we do not sacrifice the delivery on the mandate, but making sure that we can in fact cut out the inefficiencies that exist as an organization. In terms of the focus area for 2010-11, in terms of the group-wide focus will be on financial sustainability, human capital development and management, diversification of revenue programs, and we have started seeing the benefits of that through our hybrid mail system, which now accounts to about 10% of our total, the 10th biggest customer in our total mail business. Rural development programs and youth development programs, as we had discussion with our department, where these were highlighted as very key, and that we'd like to focus on what the post office is doing and will continue doing. For each of the business units, the post-bank corporatization and legislative process, the completion of the initial phase of the logistics consolidation and sustainability model. For the mail businesses, the postal addressing and postal code system and innovation in the e-postal space. And in our consumer services, in our retail outlets, it is continued focus on service excellence and training and putting in the right IT infrastructure to be able to continue doing that. Just to indicate the regulatory framework, we use this as a framework that guides us in terms of how we should be able to look at that from the mandate of the post office, the key priorities of government, and how we align our government program of action, and we will indicate those ones just now. For regulatory and framework, we would just like to highlight that the proposed legislative changes that the committee is currently dealing with and that we know, just to highlight that is one of the issues that we are concentrating on as the post office. But in terms of the mandate, just going through and looking at what we are doing as a post office for alignment to the mandate and the issue that has been presented by the department and the minister last week. In terms of fighting crime, preventative programs and crime buster hotlines, and we are really proud because in 2 years' time, Mr. President, we were going through a very difficult time through our crime prevention, and we reinvented and relaunched our crime buster hotline, and the increase in reporting went very high. But what that helped is that people felt that they could come and report. Out of that, we have managed to squash two or three syndicates that are operating within our midst, and with the collaboration that we have with FAPS, we believe this is a very good a program that will continue making sure that we continue with and we can contribute to the issues of fighting crime, but also to make sure that our processes and the products that we get are really protected from any possibilities of criminals within our element. In terms of improved access to ICT, we had indicated that the ICT business unit will start in 2010, and we are way ahead of that schedule where the consolidation and the strategy for the ICT business unit is now on track, and we will be launching some of those programs in 2010. But we are also very proud around some of the issues that we've dealt with in terms of the eCADA program that we have introduced and the learnership programs, and I will share some of the statistics with the members a little bit later. In terms of the service delivery, this is one area where we achieve exceptionally well in part of the area and do exceptionally bad in other areas. And the area that we do not do very well in is around our retail rollout, and I'd like to just deal and have a discussion around those issues so that we indicate some of the things that we have. The investment in our IT infrastructure continues to be a challenge in terms of the funding, the pace of implementation, and other issues, but we have continued to focus on it to make sure that we continue with it. And branch expansion and address expansion, I will just cover that for now. Those two form part of our requirements in terms of the delivery on license, on our license agreement. And just to share with members that we do have a target that says we need to roll out 100 post offices every year, refurbish and relocate another 100 in the issues that we have. We do need to say at this point that target is very difficult to attain. And what we are trying to do is to see how well we can be able to look at it in such a way that it does. And I think when we look at it, I always say when I take 100, it means 2 new post offices every week of the year that we need to be able to put down. In physical outlet, you probably can manage 3/4 of that. But in making it operational, we need to train people, we need to get people into those offices to be able to run. Because it's not a physical structure, it's an operational post office that we need to have. And those are some of the issues. But in the past 2 years, we have managed now to meet the 100 and we have completed that. And the board has approved for us in dealing with those that we need to do, about 31 that are currently in place that we are working on achieving. But just to indicate some of the challenges that we face under our retail outlet, and this is a challenge that we keep on having discussions with ICASA around for ICASA to understand the impact of the mandate. The target is for the license requires that we roll out one post office for 10,000 inhabitants in the country. And what we want to indicate is to indicate what that means. And what we've done is look at the provincial structures and see where are we over-represented and where are we under-represented and by how much and how are we going to look at it. Now, as you tell us in the last census, we have gone through that. And we've done two or three possibilities on the issues that that are addressed. And the preferred one that we would have for us is to be able to roll out 1 to 14,000 inhabitants in the country and excluding children under 10 because we are saying that would be then catered for. And if you look at that, you see the blue legend will give you the existing outlets. But if you look at housing, because of the concentration of people, we need to have about 600 and 15 more post offices to roll out. If you look at an area like Northern Cape, we would then be overrepresented in those numbers, and we go through these things to be able to indicate where it is. In looking at this, building physical post offices may not attain that. And one of the strategies that we've then put down that the board has insisted that we deal with is looking at the multi-channel strategy that doesn't just talk about the physical outlet, but what other alternatives are there for access that is not necessarily within there. That will include issues around mobile, that would include that would include partnerships with agencies, that would include community offices and all other issues that you need to look at. So the three will then, if you see the gray, the top one will indicate what the difference would be if we had to interpret it in different scenarios in terms of the different shortfalls that we're looking at for that. So we thought that we should be able to indicate to the committee their challenge and how big it is for us to go through. This will obviously relate to the issues of the subsidy at a later stage, and we will be able to go through with that. However, getting into another one that is our address expansion, the department, when they presented, indicated that we need to commit to rolling out 10%, additional 10% of the total household population addresses in the country, and we would like to inform and report that in fact our target is within that range. At the last statistics that we've got about 13.2 million households, and therefore a target of about 1.3 million, and we have set a target of 1.6 million. We have been reaching this target, and we believe we'll continue doing that. But further to that is that what we are looking at is looking at the target that moves in terms of how many households we should in fact be able to deliver to. Therefore, 89% of all households, irrespective of the dwelling type that we're talking about. Our service delivery, as in the mail business services, the target is 95%, that it is, and we're standing at 96%. And in terms of our peak clearance, our target is no more than 7 minutes. We achieve this on our low peaks, but on our high peaks, it is a major problem in terms of the issues that we deal with. For example, the first 2 weeks in the month where we pay social grants, the average waiting time is very long because of the numbers that we just have to deal with. So those are the things that we do to alleviate that problem. The investment into our IT infrastructure, investment into further points will assist us in going forward. The members may allow me, I'll then get into community development programs of some of the issues that we deal with. This is our contribution to the community development program, and we just want to highlight that to the honourable members. In terms of job creation, it is around local contractors, whether we do the building of the post offices, we insist on the local contractor issues, the ECADA program, where we employ the youth and they go onto our ECADA program, then assist us in the rural areas, in the areas of making sure that they can deal with that. Rural addressing expansion program. Our addressing program is specifically focused in addressing the underserviced, which would be rural mainly, and other underserviced areas that we deal with. Financial services, the banking and the fair offers that we deal with our partners, as the committee might be aware that we are currently dealing with the SAB share scheme that we've had, the issues that we deal with, and I would like to assure the honourable members that we have learned from the issues that we deal with, and we continue to learn on those processes that we have dealing with. One program that I would like to highlight in particular that deals with what the chair would call innovation diversification is our government services that come from our motor vehicle licensing. This program that we started together with the Department of Transport for the past 2 years, and we have seen phenomenal growth and access to people on dealing with a major problem that they would have had that is assisting us quite a lot, that is assisting the Department of Transport, but also assisting in the post office in terms of revenue generation. And also, the last time we were at the portfolio committee, the members asked about those municipalities that are outstanding that we are not doing business with. We continue having and engaging with municipalities at the right levels, and we have seen some improvement in some of those issues. I've spoken about building and renewal of post offices and lobby boxes when we deal with the issues, and the CSI program, but also more importantly, the employee volunteerism. This is one program that I think the spirit of the SAPO, as we call ourselves, has come out very much and it is in fact humbling that we launched an employee volunteerism program last year where employees are given a day and the company matches us with a day to go and make a difference in those communities that they deal with, and they have taken it up in ways that is unexpected in the numbers that they have dealt with, because they then feel the benefits of what they are doing in their communities. And I think what this helps with is that it reaches the communities that through a DSI program alone you may not be able to reach. Under human capital development, I just want to pause and talk about our human capital interventions and the issues that we're dealing with. And we are also very fortunate to be sitting at this point in time to also announce that through the services sector, who is our partner in our qualification as we fall under that, we have now managed to get qualifications of postal being accredited as an MTF level. And that means people now can get a diploma, a degree in postal issues that we need to deal with. And I think it is quite an issue because postal issues are not available in any university, and I think that's one of the issues that we have. So I think we are there. But secondly, the recognition of prior learning. If members would remember, about 3 to 4 years ago when we came in, we kept on speaking about qualification, compliance, and training, where when we are looking at the banks, we knew that we needed people who would have matric, who would need to have a matric because it's part of the requirements and other issues that we deal with. And through this process, just this past month, we have been putting through qualified employees of the post office who have gone through a recognition of prior learning process, who have gone in and made sure that they can, and are given different MTF levels for those issues. So it's keeping us in the way that we do. I just want to also highlight, honourable members, two processes around what we are doing outside the post office and with our other partners, where our customers might require expertise within the mail environment. And together with SAG Defence Force, FNDF, we have gone through a qualification level of 3 with people who work in the FNDF, in especially the countries outside where FNDF is working. And we are currently working with the Reserve Bank on the similar process that we're looking at. Just to share some of the youth development programs, this is our grade 12 learners that we have gone through in terms of an empowerment intervention. A computer literacy skills that we have provided in the rural areas together with the Department of Communication, and that we continue with that process in this current financial year. And more importantly for us, digital literacy training for our SMEs, our suppliers who fall into that phase. We finished the initial training last year, and we are going through the one for this year, and we continue trying to roll it out into the SME database that we have in order for them to be able to be on a section where they can be able to compute. I think this is one of the projects that we comes up also in terms of the issues that we'd like to deal with. This financial literacy program, which in fact is funded from a fund that we applied and competed for with partners for that. That is helping with financial literacy within communities for people to be able to change their banking behavior that they would have for productive measurements that we do. And I think that has helped us quite significantly. And it's a program that just started this year. We are hoping that we will deal with that. But let us talk about, we are developing the people. What is it that we do? Because we need to be able to absorb them in one way. And we thought we should just highlight what we have managed to do. Since we started the program, we're seeing a gradual increase of this graduates being appointed into permanent positions, and that deals with the areas where they are appointed in, and it just gives you the other issues. We'll be computing the 1.29 and 10 when it finishes in this particular year. We do not just do development initiatives in training within South Africa. We also work with our SADC countries, and that's some of the process that we are embarking on and that is embarked on the SADC development initiative. This is just another one of the illustrative digital issues for internal employees and for the people that we're going through with, for us to be able to go through for training and upskilling people in computer literacy within the organization. The other issue that was raised and also highlighted within the GOC presentation was issues around international relations, and I'll just leave that slide for members to see where the post office, together with the GOC, we participate in international activities and international relations. That I should say we have made a major difference and much within, especially within the African continent and also within SADC in some of the issues that we deal with. May I lastly talk about, and I just recognize the Deputy Minister as she's coming in, as she is here, the environmental project that we have started. And as we look at it, I think when we took up this step, it was a very daunting task, but we have managed to really go through with the processes within the environmental program, and we are very proud of the progress that we have made. But more importantly, we launched together with partners a climate change leadership award that is mainly focused at recognizing communities and individuals who are making an impact in terms of the environment. And we had the first inaugural award on last week, Tuesday, and we were awarding people on those issues. And I think it's one of the things that I think from the program of the post office we have really made a lot of progress on. We were advised that the numbers that we had put in terms of the 900 numbers that we were looking at need to be reviewed, and therefore we will be reviewing that in terms of what we can be able to do. We now know that it is possible with partners we can do more around that number, so we are looking at that. Just in terms of challenges for 2010, the declining revenue, and I think the CFO will indicate that, impact of subsidy reduction on investment programs, capacity issues in terms of technology and systems continues being a challenge. The issues around the deregulation and corporate governance. But in terms of deregulation, we are saying when the regulation comes up, the monopoly discussion comes up, as a post office, we need to be able to indicate how we can be able to respond to that. But in fact, how government should still keep the universal service obligation, because we believe that as a country, in terms of our postal services, we are not yet where we should be. And therefore, taking through the stakeholder management still remains a challenge, because we need to go in and do the issues of social marketing on the ground, and people to really know the importance and feel from the excellence of the service that we provide what the postal service is doing to change their lives. I think on the critical success sectors, Chair, I would just like to highlight that we'll continue in making sure that the programs that we put in place continue and they can be achieved for us to take it forward. I will now hand over to the Group Financial Officer to take us through the numbers and indicate how we will deal with that.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Just to briefly talk about the financial performance of the company. The first slide, we're just talking a little bit about the forecast for the current year. We are anticipating a reduction in profitability for the company this year. It's been a very, very tough year. The chairperson, the CEO, have talked about the economic climate, and it's certainly impacted our business. We're anticipating a revenue decline of some 4% across all of our businesses. Mail revenue, although showing a 3% growth, if you offset that from the tariff increase, of 9%, it's about a 6% volume reduction. So we had seen a volume reduction in our biggest business, which is mail, for the current year. That's been exacerbated by the strike which we had during the current financial year. It's also impacted our volumes. Our logistics business, 12% decline. Interest, because of the current low prevailing interest rates, is showing a 29-30% decline on prior year levels, which has impacted Postbank particularly. On contrary, financial services has shown some growth, particularly mainly as a result of government grant payments and the motor vehicle licenses we've been rolling out through our outlets. As a result of that, we're anticipating a profit decline of some 26% for the end of this year, which means it's going to be reduced to around about 300 million, down from the 408 million which we reported in the last financial year. So it is a tough environment, and we are certainly feeling it along with a lot of other organisations. We have, however, responded. One of the things that we've been able to do is manage our costs very well. If you look at our overall costs this year, they will be down, reduced by around about 2% on the same period last year. So if you look at the CPIX running at around 7, that's quite a reasonable achievement. These are the areas that we focused on. Mainly a lot of areas like marketing we've cut by 50%. We take a huge amount of cash over our counters every month, cash checks, electronic payments, totaling around about 1.5 billion rand a month goes across our counters. So you can imagine that our bank charges are very, very high. We've managed to negotiate those down with our service providers. Our air travel, with all our outlets across the country, there's obviously a lot of travel that we undertake, and we've brought that down by around about 42% in the current year. And also on the fleet side, we've rationalized a lot of our routes, particularly on the line haul and synergies between our mail business and our courier business, which has meant that our transport costs have come down by 13%. So we have responded well, and I think we've managed to actually keep our costs under control. On the next slide, the next slide just shows the overall income statement. Revenue for this year going to be down by 4% to 5.6 billion. Expenses down by 2% to 5.2, and operating profit of 300 million down by 26%, as I said. Now, looking out for the budget, what is the outlook like for next year, for this coming financial year, should I say? I think most economists are saying a 2.5% growth in GDP, in other words, a slow climb out of the recession, and I think our budget has been constructed along similar lines, very, very conservative from a cost control perspective, and also conservative from a revenue perspective. So we're going to see some improvement, but it's going to be slow. Our revenue growth is forecasting at 7%, mail 8% increase, logistics 8% coming off a low base, and the financial services business a 7% increase on prior year. On the post-bank side, that's one area where we're looking at above average growth. Our book continues to grow, post-bank depositors' funds continue to grow, people continue to invest with the post-bank, and we're expecting a growth in depositors' book of some 12%, which is around about 400 million rand. And that means that our post-bank service fees will grow by 9%. And then interest revenue, we anticipate a slight increase of 6%, which is a reverse of the 29% decline we've seen this year. We also, however, will continue to remain tough on costs. We are very, very conservative in terms of our cost increases. You can see that we've projected staff cost increase of 7% next year, external service providers 5%, transport 6%, so well within the CPIX target. The only area where we do anticipate a lot of cost pressure, which is going to be exacerbated with the subsidy being phased out, is our accommodation, which is the cost of actually maintaining our physical infrastructure. So in other words, rental, electricity, rates on all of our property infrastructure across the country, as we roll out these 100 outlets a year, it's going to continue to put pressure on that particular area from a cost perspective. This just shows you some of the revenue, gives you some details in terms of revenue, and you can see over the last 5-6 years that mail continues to be our biggest business with 69% of our total revenue, followed by logistics at 12% and the balance of around about 20% made up by financial services and post-bank. So the challenge is for us is to really focus on growing those revenue streams in the new budget year and diversifying our revenue from the mail business, which has suffered a volume decline. Honourable Chairperson, I just put quite a lot of detail in there because I know you requested it last time in terms of the in terms of the new legislation. But I won't dwell on that. It's there for you. You can read it at your leisure. But just to show that the budget line, we're anticipating a profit increase of 19% in the new budget year from 300 million to 356 million. So we're anticipating a turnaround, but a slow one, as I mentioned. This next slide just shows the five-year projection, the budget year plus the next four. And I think that the line I want to draw your attention to is below the operating profit line, which is the subsidy line. We don't put it into operating profit because the businesses don't see the benefit of that, so they don't become dependent on subsidy. We bring it in at a corporate level. And you can see that subsidy is essentially the money that we draw down to fund our universal service costs. You can see that in the new budget year, it's projected at 119 million. in the following budget year, 126 million and next zero. As you can see, that the subsidy has been phased out over the next 3 years, and you can see that that will have an impact of some 150 million rand in terms of our bottom line. On the balance sheet side, just very briefly, the balance sheet remains very strong. Our total assets are forecast to go to 9.6 billion in the next year, mainly driven by short-term investments, which is the way we invest the money that are deposited with us from Postbank. Postbank is a key driver on the continued health of a balance sheet, which is strong. On the liability side of the balance sheet, just one area I'd like to show draw your attention to, and that's the capital and reserves. You can see that we have quite strong solvency of 2.5 billion excess of our assets over our liabilities. And then the biggest liability on that side of the balance sheet is our deposits from the public, which we're anticipating, as I said, to go up by 400 million to around about 4 billion in the new financial year. Cash flow, very briefly, the only line I'd like to draw your attention to is the cash flow from operations. We are generating cash at the operating level, which funds quite a lot of our capital expenditure. And you can see that this year we're forecasting 226 million rand cash generated by the business, and then next year 395, 400 million. Then about midway down the slide, you can see a cash inflow outflow from subsidy. And that is budgeted for 268 million, then 158 million, and then, as I say, down to zero. So if you look at it, at the moment, we're probably almost 50-50 from a profitability perspective. So in other words, 60% of cash is generated from our own business and 40% has been generated by subsidy. That will now obviously change in 3 years' time. All of the cash will need to come from our own business. And I'll just talk a little bit about those challenges. This is the operating profit margin. We've actually projected that over the last 5 years. You can see that we continue to remain profitable, although in the current financial year we have seen a dip. Our profit margin has dropped to 5.4%, and we're projecting it to go up to around about 6% in the coming financial year. Just briefly, some profitability ratios. I think the area of note there is return on assets, which has dropped to 3.3% and is forecast to recover slightly to 3.7% in the new budget year. Just getting into a little bit more detail in subsidy, in the current financial year, we will have at our disposal some 684 million rand, which is made up of a 400 million additional transfer, and then a carryover of some 300 million rand from prior year. This is essentially how it will be spent and continues to be spent. 250 million of that will go in property infrastructure, that's the rollout of new postal outlets and the upgrading of postal outlets. Approximately the same amount will be spent on IT. IT is becoming a more and more important critical area of our business and more costly, with the balance of 136 million funding the universal service obligation. That's the cost of rolling out postal outlets in areas and delivering mail into areas which are obviously not commercially viable. And the balance is that. There are some of the projects that we have, specifically some of the larger projects that we've actually funding or partially funding from subsidy payments, branch repositioning. A lot of our OSHA compliance has been actually funded through some of the subsidy. And you can see a lot of mail automation and IT automation projects such as bandwidth upgrade, disaster recovery and IT, and network upgrades in our IT side, have contributed. We have contributed funds from subsidy for that purpose. This just shows you the detail of the subsidy, and you can see that in the last MTEF, the subsidy was running at around about 400 million rand per year, including VAT. This last, we have seen a reduction of 100 million, 250, and then 456. So in 3 years' time, the subsidy will be down to around about 52 million. That will create certain challenges. If you look at the next slide, the key areas from a subsidy perspective and the impact to the business is we will not obviously have the benefit of the universal service costs being funded by subsidy. That will impact us to around about 150 million a year. We are also writing off a lot of our capital projects against subsidy, so our depreciation costs will rise. We do believe that we will be able to fund our CAPEX out of our own cash flows. However, We will need to look and get more creative in terms of how we fund our building rollout. As you can imagine, with the loss of that money, 100 outlets a year is not sustainable from a cost perspective. So we will be reviewing the way in which we manage that rollout program. This just shows you the cash generated and the impact of the reduction in subsidy on our capex. What this essentially means is we've had to reduce our capex spending, which in the previous year was projected as around about 700 to 800 million, to around about 5 to 600 million. So it has had an impact of some 200 million on our capital expenditure line. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand back to the CEO.
Thank you, CFO. So, just in conclusion for this session, Chairperson, we will also be guided because we do have another presentation that was asked for on the labour broker that we need to do. The issues that we would like some assistance on, that we would appreciate assistance on, it is obviously the legislative issue that is currently underway. Under the regulatory support I had indicated before, when the DOC made their presentation, they hinted at the issue of the postal quality unit within ICASA, and we believe that within the regulatory arm, we do need to have a clear focus on postal issues that we would like to get support on and making sure that it does happen from that perspective. But also it assists in terms of dealing with all the other issues that the post office is currently facing, the deregulation issues, and the issues of the subsidy that we need to be able to look at. The CFO has just indicated the subsidy utilization issue, and from that perspective, we strongly believe as a post office that the universal service obligation mandate still has to remain. Like I indicated earlier on, we do not believe that the country is yet at a stage that we can be able not to have that obligation to go through. However, the funding of that obligation needs to be able to look to be looked at in terms of how we're going through. And therefore, as a post office, together with the department, will work at a paper that will be able to be positioned, that will be able to make proposals in how we can be looking at the issues of ESO funding going forward. As far as the strategy presentation, Chairperson, this is the end. We will get guidance from the committee.
Yes, that you proceed with the second presentation.
As we proceed, I'll ask the chairperson to introduce.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and members. We are presenting here the status in terms of the labour brokers. We just want to highlight, you know, from particularly the board perspective, that this is just one of the areas where we have worked very hard in terms of partly stabilising the company and also the strategy of transformation of the company. And we will highlight through the presentation some of the areas. One of our concerns as a board was the area of particularly non-compliance by labour brokers and the implications of that in terms of the South African Post Office. And we came up with a review of the overall labour broker initiative, which was commissioned from our side through the CEO, which we'll talk to at this point. And this related partly to issues relating to labour laws as well as employment benefits. And also we looked at the issues relating to the agreement signed between ourselves and the labour, because we wanted to ensure that everything is happening, but we recognised that there were some gaps from our side. The other area we talked about and we presented on previous meetings here in Parliament was the issue of the reduction of number of labour brokers. Not labour brokers per se, let me rather put it as the increase in the number of permanent staff, because we were concerned in terms of branches or outlets of the post office which were run by part-timers. So our efforts were in terms of intensifying the permanent staff, you know, appointments to ensure that we have a ratio of 70% at least in branches and outlets to ensure that we are not exposed to casual staff in terms of running, and a lot of progress has been achieved in terms of that, and the CEO will talk about that. And linked to that was the issue of the absorption strategy in terms of the labor brokers, and this exposed us to some of the challenges in terms of the initial selection of the labor brokers, which made it very clear to us that you cannot just take everybody. You need to be very clear in terms of how they were selected and have a strategy from our side. So I'm just raising these issues to show that we've had a very focused and intensive approach to ensure that we clear the air for the transformation of particularly the human capital for the achievement of the goals of the South African Post Office. But what becomes clear in the end is that as the Post Office, we always will need flexible labor. And what we need to agree upon going forward is the model that is a suitable model that is legitimate and also favorable to the workers. I now hand over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, may I just start before I get into the presentation today. As a post office, we have really, this has been one of the difficult processes we've had in the long time. It is quite challenging to deal with because it does have a lot of human rights issues that are linked to it. And therefore, we cannot ignore those issues. I think the Chair has indicated some of those issues that we deal with. But the way that we're going to cover the presentation was to sit down and say, why is it that there is a need for people to be able to do this? And if that's the case, when you look at the challenges that we have, what are you as a post office doing as far as those challenges are concerned to be able to deal with those? I think, basically, as the Chair has indicated, the Board has been on this issue for a while, and we have gone through as a post office and looked at several issues that we can look at to be able to come to an understanding of how we do so that a proper way forward is crafted for us to deal with this issue. Company programs that we have, for example, the issues of address expansion, where we know that we are going to need labour for a particular period of time, training of existing employees, extended working hours in certain branches, and secondly, and the issues of the peak hours that we have in our businesses. Seasonality of business operations within consumer services, which is our retail brand, and in our mail business that we do, and especially for startup initiatives that we have. And we had to put this down to be able to really measure whether what is currently happening, does it align to the objective or it has been done for any other reason? Because if it doesn't meet these requirements, then what does it do? And this is like creating a framework of how we would want to work on it. But what we have indicated is that we do have various forms of labor, and partly some of those we would like to cover and make clear. Permanent employees, as we know, we do have what we call permanent part-timers, which would be employees who work less than 8 hours, on average about 4 hours a day, and that's what they do. And in those ones, we also have S32s, who are people who can come in at a particular area or for an hour or issues that are being dealt with and they go away. In terms of the flexible labor, we do have fixed-time contractors, employees who come in on a fixed-time contract, and they come in and they do work after the 6 months or a year they leave. We do have what we call owner drivers, contracted drivers, who will be in our logistics space mainly, be helping us in terms of the delivery of parcels or maybe in other issues. These are people who have their own transport. Some have their own transport companies or their own transport to be able to deal with this issue. We do have agents who are people that we use, for example, our transport agents within the bigger transport in transport units where people, we would have to take mail to the very, very rural areas where we don't have, so we contract people who then deal with it, and we do have casuals who deal with it. The casuals would be employed via a labor broker on a temporary basis due to seasonality trends and the issues that we have mentioned on. In terms of staff complements, full-time employees permanent, 16,344, full-time employees and permanent part-timers, including those, and terminations per year, including retirements, would be about 1,202. In terms of our casual and labor broker staff, on the full-time equivalent, we are talking about 3,850 to about 4,000. As you said, it will be dependent on the peak periods and other issues that we are dealing with. The service providers that we currently have 14 in number, one in each of the SAPO's regions, and in five regions, and we have more than one in our Gauteng region, which is basically our Gauteng province. 8% of those are 100 and black owned. For the other six, the majority shareholdership is sitting on those numbers as we talk about. The chair has indicated that when the board came up and said, let us look at how we're going to deal with this issue and how we are going to be looking at, there are several issues that we can immediately deal with as an organization. And some of the issues we had in fact started dealing with labor for a while as we go in into our substantive agreements in terms of this issue going through with it. We just wanted to indicate how much we have moved in terms of the issues that we have dealt with in the past financial years in order for us to get to this point. However, before I do that, I think the second bullet would be important to highlight. As of 2005, in our substantive agreement, what we've agreed with labor is that we need to be able to have like a feeder system into that and taking into account the permanent part-timers, fixed-time contractors, and casuals as in that order for appointments to be made. So when we advertise and we place appointments, we will then move people into the feeding system, into the, we will move people into the permanent positions in those numbers. Just to indicate what we have done through our redeployment strategy and program that has been agreed with labor, 415 permanent part-timers have been placed as permanent, casual to permanent part-timers to 39, and casual to permanent at 850. It is a start. It still doesn't look at all the issues that we need to look at, and we need to be able to say, what else do we do? But we believe it is a start that we have done as an organization to be able to go through that. Some of the concerns and issues that have been raised that we need to deal with, and some of them we have looked at. And I think just using the terms is equal pay for equal work as we look at the issues that we deal with. Fair remuneration of employees, of labor brokers to be able to do that. When people have come into the system, how do we ensure that we can be able to do that? As of the board in last year indicated and said we need to be able to go through that, for us to implement the increases that we needed to implement this year, we then made a condition on the issue that all of the increases have to be transferred to the employee themselves rather than to the agency in terms of the issues that we have to deal with. The no control on compliance in terms of what we dealt with is that now as a post office, we are putting in mechanisms of audit. The chair has indicated the issues of an investigation and audit in the processes that we need to do. But we've also included that as a post office, we will do spot checks with the employees. We will do audits in the labor broker themselves in terms of compliance, in terms of whether the breakdowns have been done with the other issues that we go through, for us to have line of sight. Because I think the time has come for us to say we have dealt with it. We cannot anymore say we've dealt with it. We need to really take major steps around it. Therefore, in terms of the labor broker agencies that we've spoken to that we have indicated, we will do audits, regular audits, we will have compliance reports, and we will check this against the regulation and the legislation currently as it deals with. But I have explained the issues of appointment of current labor broker staff and other issues that we have dealt with in the way that we're dealing with it. Further to this issue, the board has also asked us to go and look at alternatives of whether this is not possible from the SAPO side, totally where we're looking at it, or a closer alternative that we will have the full sight and oversight in terms of the issues that we have to deal with in issues of the labor brokers We are waiting on that. We will present it to the board in time for us to be able to then, if you, the committee allows, we can come back and deal with it. But we will also, in the process, have discussions as part of our agreement with Labour on consultative, but also an issue that will, with Labour, because they'll be able to point out, to ask some of the issues that we can see from our side in terms of how we can be able to deal with this going forward. And I think lastly, in talking about this issue of the Labour brokers, is that we believe that the South African Post Office has to comply to all legislation and regulations that the government has put out and that will put out. And we remain committed to making sure that, that we can be able to do. Thank you.
I just want to say that in the end, the issue of labour brokers is bigger than the post office, and we are awaiting the outcomes of the parliamentary and government processes, so we'll be guided by the overall or the final decision in terms of how they're proceeding.
Yeah, Pepper. Okay. We are through.
Thank you very much for a very detailed presentation on both issues. You need some water? We need a 3-minute break, all right? There's water there and juice there. And let's break for a few minutes if you are tired. The bubble last Tuesday. This is the first time that the opposition parties were asking for a short rest break or comfort break. What it means is they actually don't have any questions. So they needed some time just to brainstorm and to think about the presentation and to come up with a few questions. But it looks like they've now focused and they are ready to put the questions. The spokesperson is Mr. Nicky van der Berg.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make sure I've got my facts correctly. As we all know, the Post Office got a very, very important task to deliver a core business to the people of South Africa. There must be a Post Office, and it's a very expensive exercise. As you said in your, what is the word, presentation, that there's not enough buildings, both offices now have to enroll a lot of these buildings, and the amount of the new post office to be built is quite huge, and I think it's very, very, very costly, or even to rent such buildings. What's actually the reason for the subsidy being cut back so quickly? And so we are sort of jumping on two stones now. Can you just explain me, how will you, enroll the new services and everything, and also there's a cut in subsidy. As we know, the other private entities or stuff in South Africa, they are not prepared to move into the rural areas, and some of these smaller outlets, I think, is running on a huge loss for the post office. If you can just give us an idea how you're going to manage that. Thank you, Chairperson.
I will be assisted by my colleagues in the issues that we do. We fully agree with the fact that the post office business is quite important and we need to do that. However, in the access and the mandate that we have, what we are trying to do is to redefine what a point of access is. And a point of access is not necessarily a physical building. And it's not necessarily a building that has to be owned by the post office. But what we can do is to start looking at what we've called a multi-channel strategy. And I think in terms of that multi-channel strategy, the COO will assist in just highlighting some of the issues. But basically, to say in areas where we would have, how do we make sure that we could in fact assist that community in terms of economic means, where the community itself would manage the post office on our behalf in some of the issues that we deal with,
Two, how do we look at other tunnels? Is it possible to have a post office in a box? Is it possible for you to can have stamps downloaded? Is it possible that you can look at all those issues that you see? So the full multi-channel strategy that looks at different points of access in response to customer needs and requirements that we are looking at to firstly look if it is possible. We are hopeful that this multi-channel strategy will assist in the following issues, dealing with the two buckets of cost that we have in the rollout. One is about laying out the physical access, that which is the building cost, but secondly, it will assist also in the role in the operating cost of that office for us to be able to deal with. Now, in terms of the subsidy, I think as indicated by the CFO, we do have two elements to the subsidy that we do. The provision of the physical structure, and secondly, the USO that he has indicated at 100 and something million, which is the running of the post office. Now, what we are saying is that obligation of running those outlets in whatever form has to remain. And together with the department, we'd like to explore alternatives of the funding of that at a cost-effective way that we can be able to go through with, as opposed to, and those are the debates that we're talking about. I'm not quite sure if the CFO and COO would like to add something.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chairperson. That one seems a bit better. Honourable Member, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson. The intent of the multi-channel strategy is to try and do two opposing things. One is to reduce the cost of providing access to services while simultaneously increasing the accessibility. Part of driving the cost down is necessarily to look at how we address the issue of the capital cost of the outlet. And that is the one component that we are looking at different models. This becomes particularly pertinent when one looks in rural areas, because the areas of expansion that we are now getting into, we are facing lower and lower population densities. Therefore, these outlets are likely to be less and less commercially viable. Consequently, we need to look at alternative mechanisms to say, what can we do other than construct a brick and mortar outlet in that space? The second one is in relation to reducing the operational cost, because reducing the operational cost renders the outlet viable in the long term. And consequently, in the multi-channel strategy, particularly in rural areas, we need to look at concepts such as, does the post office uniquely need to operate on its own, or can it operate in conjunction with an existing community-owned business, so that the operating cost is amortized over more than one product line? And also, do we bring more flexibility in terms of operating hours and operating methodologies, so that where it simply isn't viable because of low population densities, to have offices open 5-6 days a week, but we can look at different mechanisms of saying, well, we won't open 8 hours a day in a community if the demand is not there. We can look at reduced operating hours, and that would alleviate the operating cost. These are components of the multi-channel strategy, but we are trying to reduce A, the capital cost, and B, the operating cost that will enable us to roll out outlets that are significantly more affordable for us and the communities that they serve.
Okay, I'd like to just, this question is very, very useful for this meeting, because one of the issues raised under challenges by the CEO was the area of deregulation. The issue of cutting subsidies from where we sit is not just about cutting money. It has serious implications in terms of policy. And this is what we're trying to highlight here, that there has to be a conversation that is broader. It's not just about cutting figures. And government has, as a shareholder, has to indicate to us which direction we're going, because that has serious implications in terms of how we operate forward. The current mandate is based on a radius of 5 kilometers and a population of 1 to 10,000. Now, that is a blueprint in western developed countries. And these were blueprints pre-IT phase. And as we speak in those countries, they are busy cutting down on those branches. And what we are saying in our case is that we are committed to issues of access. And we actually did a demand study to understand where the areas of needs are, hence the slides that were being presented. And what we are saying is that the issue is not necessarily, I mean, we need to consider areas of us as a developing country, one, and two, in terms of other mechanisms beyond brick and mortar in terms of accessibility. And this is a conversation we're currently having with ICASA, and we've requested our minister to convene a meeting between us and ICASA so that we can deal with this thing and put it into perspective so that it becomes a non-compliance issue for us, and we really want to deal with the practicality of it going forward. So I'm just saying that it is important to have this discussion at this point because, you know, it has implications, and I'm hoping that even Department of Finance recognizes this is not just about cutting, you know, finance, budget or subsidy. It is really potentially a shift in policy, and we need to be ready and properly briefed in terms of what direction that is taking.
Can I just check on this issue? Is it exclusively ICASA's right to set the condition, or is there a discretionary right for the minister to set a policy framework? I'm just trying to understand the exact who determines the policy.
The policy framework is determined by the department. The targets and the mandates are determined by ICASA based on the policy framework. And out of those, currently ICASA is in fact working on an economic framework that they would, I think when they finalize with it, it will determine the targets that we have. But we have submitted to ICASA on several occasions our view in terms of how the access should be done in terms of physical access, and hence the slides that you are presenting based on the demand study that the chairperson has indicated. We've done that not only in retail outlets, but we've done it also in terms of our address expansion, in saying how is it that we can be able to cover all households, especially the underserviced, the rural households, in giving them services that are coming into the post office. But also realizing that the post office, in our view, should not just be around the delivery of postal services. It is also an access point for government services that can be brought in either online or in any other way that we can be able to do. So trying to make it an integrated point of service in areas where there is no service at all.
Patricia?
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the Post Office. Thank you for the strategic plan. I want to start with the last presentation on the labour brokering. And I want to understand this, Chairperson, because you do have an HR department. When you use labour brokering, is it some outsourcing of part of the task of the HR that you use labour brokers? And more or less, what amount do you spend on labour brokers? And what percentage of what you pay to the labour brokers actually go to the casual or temporary worker? I just want to understand that. The other question is, in terms of your delivery on license agreement, you say mail at target 95%, delivery at 96%. Queue length, waiting time with no more than 7 minutes. From what do you want to take? Do you want to take 50 minutes is the current waiting time? You want to bring to 7? From where do you want to bring it down to 7? The same with the mail target. You want to achieve 96%. Where are you currently that you want to increase it to 95%? You just briefly, when you dealt with deregulation, you seem to be saying that the time is not right for deregulation, and that you should, the post office must remain, must keep the monopoly. Have you got any idea to when? Or will it not be more beneficial to South Africans if you deregulate than keep the monopoly? And until when do you see such a monopoly must remain? The third question on the finances. It's good to see that you've taken some measures to respond to the economic crisis. And what caught my eye was the savings on travel, 42% reduction. But when you look at page 27, there's also quite a big amount that's spent on accommodation. Have you looked at, I think it's something like 379 million. Have you looked at how you can also reduce cost of accommodation? I think I want to suggest that not only for the staff of the post office and employees of the post office, but we should be looking at placing a limit per night per room. If the limit is 1,500, that will be the limit. If you decide you want to have more luxury, you have to pay for it. So in terms of austerity measures, will you also look into accommodation? Then, it's number four now. I'm going to ask all of them and I'm going to stop. In terms of the subsidy that you receive from government, then you also say that you are making a profit, although it's going to be a bit down this year, but do you pay any dividends to government from that profit? That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'll take the easier one. In terms of the delivery target, 95% is in fact the target that has been set, and we are attaining 96%. This is the target that has been set. 7% is the target that has been set in terms of queue waiting time, and we average, like I said, during peak periods, we could average anything between 20 minutes. Just below 20 minutes, for example, for payment of social grants. However, on average normal days, we do average something between 5 and 7%, but I think we want to be able to reduce it to a point that is more easier. And hence, the issues around IT infrastructure increases and others will help us quite a lot for the issues around consumer services and the numbers we have. I will deal with the issues of deregulation. We strongly believe that it is not yet the right time to deregulate, because in terms of what the mandate of the post office and what the intention of the post office is in terms of access, we need to be able to look at it as a country to say, are we as a country yet at a point where the international benchmarks, as the chairperson had indicated, are attained? But secondly, in terms of the state or the economy of the country, where should we be? But the second reason why I believe that as a country we are not yet there is that the debate around deregulation doesn't come together with the issue of universal service obligation for whoever operates. If it gets opened up, whoever operates needs to have the issues of universal service obligation. The third reason why we are looking at it is that, in fact, out of the international benchmark that has been made, we can take some of the leaders in the postal industry global-wide who have stated deregulation. And let me use Germany as an example. That they stated 10 years ago that they are putting a deregulation and a monopoly out in 10 years' time. As of last year, because the 10 years is 2010, Germany is re-looking
whether it is right time to deregulate at this point in time. We then look at the deregulation phases within the UK, who have looked at the deregulation and the reduction of the monopoly, not from taking out the monopoly as a whole, but reducing the grammage that you can put within the post office. Because as the chairperson indicated, the monopoly for the post office business is only on all items that are less than 1 kilogram. So there are different ways that you can do the issues of deregulation. You can look at the grammage, and in other countries they've done those, reduce it to 750, 500, so that whatever it is, it just becomes that communication that goes out and everybody can play. And I think as a country we have not as yet had a discussion around what the impact of that is. But I think it also links with our departmental objectives of ensuring that access to postal services and others remain affordable. The ability for communities, for individuals in the country to communicate has to be kept as affordable as possible to do that, and we believe we are managing to go through with it. Therefore, whether, Honourable Member, I would not be able to say now when we would be, but I think in terms of the studies that we do, we would be able to sort of indicate in terms of time frames that we have. I do, however, also want to highlight the issue that the post office operates under a license. And the license is, in fact, a 25-year license. It is renewable every year. The license started in 2002. So we are not very far into our license in terms of the issues that we have, because we, in fact, have a 25-year license monopoly that we need to do. We are not even as yet halfway to those issues, but I just wanted to indicate that. May I just, the CFO will deal with the accommodation, but I just want to highlight that the accommodation issue is not as, doesn't only cover the accommodation of travel, but in terms of the measures that we have put, the measures are in fact much stricter than what the Honourable Member is saying. We have downgraded not only the hotel, even the hotels have been downgraded by level. We make sure that as you go in, there is a reason that you can travel. If you cannot do it telephonically, there has to be, so you can't quite go out and go through the issues that we need to do. So we've put very, very strict controls on that issue. However, we also need to understand that in our, the people who do the work, we have had, in fact, in this year to look at measures, because as we know, the issues of travel, the issues of petrol have increased for people who are doing the work, and we wouldn't want to disadvantage them, but also ensure that the operations continue. So for our austerity measures, they are quite significant, and I think in the numbers that we see, we deal with. But the CFO will deal with the issues of the accommodation. We do not as yet pay dividends, Honourable Member, and we do hope that it will not be asked for a while in about do that, because what we do with our profit that we generate, as indicated by the CFO, we reinvest it into the business, into CAPEX programs that will allow us to generate further revenues that we're able to do. But we also, I think, from the board's insistence, that the post office has to remain self-sustaining, and it has to get into the self-sustaining mode. And as we go through with that, we will be taking those issues that we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. Honourable Member, the question that you are asking about how much of amount goes into the labour broker payments for employees. What we have, in fact, looked at from the point of our numbers is that the labour broker has to have an 8.59%, which we call the management fee. So from that, which I call it the base, the rate that you pay, 8.59 to go to management fees. And there's a rate that goes to the employees themselves, and there are rates allocated to issues like pension, EIS, and all those issues that are broken down. What you were indicating earlier on is that the audit is to ensure that those issues are being done, and therefore there has to be a compliance report from our service providers to say we are indeed meeting
these issues, and that we can have proof of those issues happening very, very directly, because it is clearly spelled out in terms of where the funds should be allocated to. What we have fallen short of is auditing and making sure that we have that line of sight to how that is implemented on the ground. In total amount, the CFO will give us those numbers and deal with the accommodation and rollout issues.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of points of clarity. The labour broker, the total amount of money we spend per year on labour brokers is approximately 400 million rand. So it's a substantial number. Now, and the issue on the accommodation, just a point of clarity there, the accommodation line that you were looking at in the income statement is not travel and accommodation. Accommodation when you travel actually goes into the travel line. That accommodation that you see there is the cost of maintaining our outlets, which is why you see the pressure on that. As we roll out outlets, the rental goes up, electricity has gone up, rates have gone up. So that is probably the area of the area of cost in our business which will remain under pressure. And we do have a limit per night per room. We have a cap at various levels of the organisation where you can't spend more than a certain amount of money per night on a room, and anything else you need to pay for yourself.
Just a follow-up, Chairperson. The line item for this 400 million, is it under external service providers? It's for fourth in there, which is about 541 million. Okay.
Wilma, Susan, Julie.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for your presentation. Just a follow-up on labour brokering. I just want to know, before you said sometimes you have temporary casual staff or part-time staff, and then apparently they will move up the bracket once there is a vacancy. So I just want to ask, when those staff that are brought in by labour brokers, is there opportunity for them to become more permanent, and then does that 8.5% fees then fall away automatically, or does it just continue? Okay. That's the one question. And then secondly, if I can go back to one of those slides on page 12, there's no clarity there. It shows the map of the various provinces. So does it mean, for example, in the Western Cape, the number there in grey, in the grey block, that Western Cape is another 171 more post offices. So does it mean that the gravy that is highlighted there, is that where there are more post offices, or they can be still be built, or, you know, yeah. Okay, just clarity on that slide itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. When you spoke about people moving up in terms of employment, we have several agreements with labour. One is what we call the redeployment strategy. The second one, it is around the absorption of casual staff into the permanent position. So there are several issues that we deal with. One, when we have a vacancy that exists, it is first advertised internally to allow the permanent part-timers to be firstly permanent. Then it is advertised where the casual staff is allowed to go through, and they either become permanent part-timers or they can in fact become permanent. What we were trying to indicate on the slide, what we've indicated, is that out of the numbers that we have, 850 of the casual staff moved into the permanent phases, and other permanent part-timers do that. We have this agreement because it means that people who have been working in the post office then get the first preference for permanent employment before we go out and get other people. In terms of the math, what we are trying to indicate, there are three figures.
Then the fee of 8.5 automatically falls away once those who are employed by labor brokers, and if they find permanent employment, that 8.5% fee then falls away, am I correct?
For the people that would have been there, yes, it falls away. Okay, sorry about that. On the issue of the slide that deals with the numbers, there are three indicators. Let me use Western Cape as a number. We have, and I hope I have the right side, we have three numbers, which is the blue and the grey and the one in the Western Cape. The one just above Western Cape would indicate the population. The blue would indicate the existing outlets. So the grey is what we still need to put in as per that. So we are missing that number to be able to meet the target that we would need to meet in the Western Cape.
You see, you've got an interesting, you've got three maps, and each one, you say, if you exclude the 0 to 10-year-old, then the number decreases, target decreases, and if you say 0 to 15, then it becomes even smaller. What's the international benchmark on this?
Chairperson, what we're indicating is that the international benchmark is 1 to 10,000 inhabitants in the country. That's the international benchmark. Now, our proposal was looking at the two alternatives of the benchmark that we proposed to ICASA. And that benchmark would be exactly what it indicates. 1 to 10,000, but excluding the children who are under the age of 10, and the other one is under the age of 15. That is all that we are looking at in terms of the proposal.
What is ICASA's reaction then?
Here we are still awaiting a
response. When did you submit this to them?
It's been a discussion going on for a while. Okay?
How long?
With the guidance of the chair for a while.
What's the while? 1 year, 2 years, five years, lifetime?
It's over 2 years. Our first proposal to ICASA was sent on 2004 for the implementation of 2005, because if you remember, I said our license is 25 years, broken into 3 years, and every 3 years we have a renewal cycle that comes in and new targets are then set based on the population studies and all other issues that we need to go through. Our numbers are based on the population now that we have gone, the last census that was done, to be able to get to the number. So every 3 years, we align to the latest statistical numbers that are in the country. So it is over 2 years that we have sent in the proposal. Okay.
No, I'm just trying to understand. So you basically want ICASA to revise the regulation, the regulatory norm. And they have to then table a document, or approve a document.
They would table a proposal that then gets gazetted in terms of the numbers and the targets that the post office needs to meet. And based on that, as per the license, they will then monitor our performance on us achieving those targets.
Okay.
And they will then say what the post office is doing.
Any further questions from Wilma's side? Is that interactive now? Okay, Susan?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, I would like personally to thank the CEO for the speedy intervention on the Mansarra community. As you remember, Chair, they waited for 7 years for a post office. I would like to thank the CEO's intervention in 2 weeks for that. My question will be on the subsidy for 684 million. I see there you have four programs. and different amounts have been allocated. I just want to know the measurements used. For example, if we decided to give IT infrastructure 250 million versus 136 million to the universal obligation, what measurements did you use to do that? And the other thing is that I observed that throughout your presentation, you have mentioned that there's a decline of revenue. Also, there are good strategies in place. What I just want to check is that we have enough capacity, skills to meet the challenge as it is now. And also, the proposed budget currently, will it be enough for you to maybe to close this gap currently? Lastly, it will be on the issue raised by Honorable Velman, partly covered. But I just wanted to check my interest was because I'm from Northwest, maybe I don't know. Just clarity for my own understanding. On page 12, you are saying the shortfall for Northwest is 52. On page 13, it's zero. Maybe if I can just get that, maybe it's there in the document because I was not part of it, I won't know. Lastly, Chair, lastly, is on the issue of the 7 minutes on the queue. What measures are there? Are you going to make sure that this becomes a reality? Because to me, it's not only about 7 minutes. It's also about the staff complement in a particular outlet. You might want to come to 7 minutes, but if one person is servicing 1,000 people, it can be a reality. Are you also going to increase staff in some of the, especially your post offices in town? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The CFO will assist with the subsidy issue. Capacity for strategies that we have put in, we would not have the full capacity that we require. But what we are doing is building those capacities that we require everywhere we go. For example, we have focused in the last year in our IT capacity, our staff in the retail outlets, in the consumer services, and our financial services in preparation for the post and corporatization. Those are the three priority areas that we needed to have capacity put in. And the capacity is in terms of numbers of people, but secondly in terms of the skills development of people to be able to do that. And in terms of the programs that we have indicated, we've indicated some of the things that we would like, that we are currently doing, that we are going to continue with. In terms of the numbers, in particular in IT, when we looked at our IT staff complement and we looked at our turnover within IT, it was very high. And we had to go through and do a benchmark process to be able to align specifically the IT component within the organization to be able to deal with this issue. And I think as honorable members would realize that IT has been a major problem for the post office going forward. Out of the last benchmark that we have done and implemented last year, we started seeing the stabilization of people leaving the post office for reasons, because when we did the exit interview, compensation was one of the issues that we had. In the retail consumer space, in the branches, we in fact identified several programs that we wanted to go through with. One was capacitating the branch managers and employing branch managers in the consumer services. Secondly, the issues of development and skills, as we had focused primarily within the consumer services, the retail outlets. And thirdly, as the chair had indicated earlier on, that when we looked at the capacity that we require in the consumer services, even though we know that we do require flexible labor, we then adopted that we will fill our post offices and our retail outlets to an 80-20 rather than a 70-30 that would apply, so that we can be able to cater with it. We are currently in the process of recruiting, and in this particular year of 2009 and 2010, we are looking at having to have employed within the retail space over 300 people that are going to be placed with that to assist with the process that we need to deal with. The CFO will deal with the finance issues. And
Thank you. Just on the question on the subsidy measurement, what we do is the USO cost element is actually accurately measured. We actually track the cost of delivery agents in remote areas. We also are able to pinpoint the profitability of post offices at a post office level. And we identify those post offices which are in rural areas, and those costs are the ones that we use from a USO perspective. So that's accurately measured and is actually tracked on a monthly basis. On the CAPEX, what we do at the beginning of every year, we sit down with our shareholder, the Partner Communications, and we actually agree, we actually table our CAPEX program, and we agree with them what CAPEX programs are going to be funded out of subsidy and which ones are going to be funded out of our own operating cash flow. And the department actually plays quite a rigorous oversight role. We actually agree it up front, and then we have to report on it quarterly in terms of how we progress against those capital plans.
Chairperson, just two questions that still outstanding. Just 7 minutes, 5 minutes, whether we in fact have the capacity to can get to that number in terms of the issues, as I explained what we are trying to do. But the other issue is enabling tools of the job for people to be able to process much faster, to be able to deal with those issues. And hence, I have started a process where we have now done with a pilot in 11 sites of updating our point of sale that is used within the retail space to a much faster and quicker system to enable people to go through on top of the human capital intervention that we're dealing with. Just in terms of the maps and the slides, I think it is a bit confusing, but it in fact gives three scenarios. It gives three alternatives. One, which is the target, and the second one, which is the proposed target with children under 10. So the numbers will differ and they will go down, and one is the proposed to children under 15 taken out. So you'll see if you apply that, it changes the numbers for each and every provinces that you go through with. So we just wanted to show the members the different alternatives that can be possible. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry. First of all, I really wanted to commend South Africa Post Office for a very interesting strategic plan. What I found very interesting when I studied it last night was the reference on page 7 to global trends, and I believe that this is very important for the South African Post Office to also identify international trends and its impact on their business. So I thought that was very interesting. And secondly, on page 35, the risk assessment, because clearly there they've listed engagements with the labour unions, the subsidy, the end of the subsidy, and regulation, deregulation, all of those. And it's important so that they could adjust their business model accordingly. And I think that was very interesting. Then also I want to commend them for page 37, the materiality framework. It's a lot of reading, Chairperson, but essentially what I could see from that was a real commitment to the PFMA and to their financial accountability in terms of that. And I think for us as the portfolio committee, which must conduct the oversight to make sure that we get rand value for every rand spent in the public sector, that is really commendable. I would like to ask three questions, Chairperson. I would like to firstly just ask them, if we're talking on the slide presentation, page 12 and 13, on the population numbers, is it the correct figure upon which the model is based? I was under the impression that it's bigger, that we don't only have where we started on the first page. Okay, that was the total population, 47. Sorry, I now notice what they have actually done so that their calculation comes down. I wanted to make sure that we're actually working close to 50 million if we talk the whole population, but that we also from there learn from what the IEC is, for instance, doing with elections. And that is, in some cases, for instance, in Gauteng, where you have a high volume, a number of people, and you don't necessarily have it, as I indicated, it's on payout day, pension payout day, that you maybe have more than one stream on specific days. And I suppose that's when the casual staff comes in to fulfill those roles. So as far as that is concerned, it seems that they are looking very creatively at ways to curtail expenditure, permanent expenditure, but to make sure that they exercise their mandate and the responsibilities that they have in terms of legislation. Chairperson, then, concern about page 14 in the strategic plan is it is very clear that the revenue versus cost trend is a matter of concern. And that is where I have understood the CFO to say that they must look at the 60-40 split and the road ahead and to diversify. How will that be done? My concern is that one of the typical problems that government departments usually face is the competing nature of capital expenditure and current expenditure, operational expenditure. And sometimes, I must say, departments do not budget for maintenance, and then you have sort of invested in capital, and you cannot invest, you cannot make provision for maintenance, and then we see what we see on the roads of South Africa, and that is more potholes than roads, and I think that is a serious concern. Is the department looking at that specific issue? Secondly, are they looking at the whole balance between current and capital expenditure? And what impact will the adjustment in the labor model that they will now implement have on future current expenditure, on specifically the impact on the salary bill? One of the benefits, obviously, of labor sort of broken, provided, and I think we should also commend you for it, looking at possible human rights violations, etc., within that sector and how you engage with those service providers, that's a good model. But ultimately, we must look at the win-win to make sure that people have work, but that we don't just have people on the staff payroll that is also burdening management with more and more people. Number-wise, are we now going to expand the South African Post Office to about 20,000? What is the impact going to be? And cost-wise, have you escalated that? Is it part of the budget that is before us at this stage? Have you already factored that in, or will that come as an addition? I noticed that your retirement rate is about 1,200 per year. Is that true? If you could just give us an indication of how do we balance that and the impact thereof on your budget. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think the IEC innovation suggestion is, I would really like to get into that because it would help quite significantly in terms of how we deal with it. We are working in terms of the numbers. I think the Honourable Member has realised what we did. We took the last census, and I agree with the fact that we do need to estimate, and I think we can get those issues through, and how we can then take those numbers and interpret it in a way that we do. We will gladly thank you for that. The diversification strategy of the Post Office is a very interesting process that is happening because, firstly, the diversification, the pillars would be making sure that we protect what we currently have and that we can grow that and we can be able to look at it from that perspective. Secondly, is introducing new revenue streams that are basically encouraged in the business that we deal with. And the introduction of the hybrid mail system, the e-post system, in about 2 to 3 years ago has assisted us in some way. And we believe it will continue to grow.
indications of that, and I think Gatia will give us the numbers on that. The indications are we started really from a no base, and we are currently sitting from a contribution point of the hybrid mail solution where people give us their data, as the chair has indicated, where we get into data management. Give us their data, we translate it into paper, or we can send it by SMS or email or fax into a business that we currently have. Just getting business that was not necessarily within the post office. We are now sitting at over 100 million out of that business we make every for the year. And we believe it has a huge potential of growth. We then looked at services like the motor vehicle licenses, where we are saying government has to make sure that they can expand their point of presence in doing some of the services. How do we partner with government in such a way that we can make this infrastructure that government has invested in accessible to everybody, including government, for people to do that? And our motor vehicle license and revenue has grown. We started the process in 2 years, and last year we launched the housing with about 15 or 10. We launched in 75, and we are running out of into housing and looking at other provinces who've seen the model because it works. It makes things a little bit better for us to be able to look at. So it is part, it's still a product that the post office can do, but it says, how do we engage that on the issue of further diversification? We have also looked at our financial services on what other products we can be able to talk about, and I'd like the MD to talk about some of the innovative products within the financial services that we are currently dealing with. The interesting issue about the nature of capital, I think, yes, as a state-owned enterprise, we suffer from the legacy problem of not maintaining, firstly, our buildings, firstly, our IT systems, and I think we are suffering that as we go through. And if you realize in some of the issues, we are seeing an order upgrade, which is made basically a maintenance of the building that we need to have. So we are paying catch-up that we will accept. We are paying catch-up, but we are also making sure that as we roll out, we also make sure that those get into the pool so that you don't get to a point where you find that the capital need becomes so excessive, whereas if you had spent the money upfront maintaining, you'd be able to have a major life spend on your properties and assets. That's just on the facilities that we are looking at. We are also looking in terms of our machinery. Some of our machinery are in fact 20 years old, and we have maintained, we've tried to take it. We are at a point that we are very happy because the board has approved for us to go through the replacement process, which comes with innovation, which will then have an impact of what we can be able to then deal with. Within the mail business, we are looking at what we call the postal addressing and code system. That will in fact enable us not only to deal with the saturated code, but also to deal with efficiency, other efficiency measures that we will be able to get within the mail business as we go through, as it is in fact our biggest revenue driver, but also our biggest cost driver. Now, part of those benefits would be you would be able to process to the work level where, as it comes out, you then have the bundle for the postman or postwoman to go and deliver. That's as far as we would like to take it. It, however, would not necessarily deal with the full reduction or the full value chain, but it will make the last mile our major focus, and the last mile is where we interact with customers, where now all the focus has to be in terms of service excellence and other issues that we deal with. Impact on the issues of staff, if we go full automation, it will have a major impact because there will be staff reduction. However, I think as we indicated, we see ourselves within a developing economy. We are playing a win-win situation to say it's not full automation we are looking at, but mechanization to be able to deal with the realities of our country for us to go forward. So it is going to go through with it. And I'll ask the MD of Postbank and the CFO to respond. Some of the programs that we embarked on, one of which was actually quite exciting when we worked with the then Land Affairs, where we had found that in most instances,
for land restitution, people were getting checks. We then converted that and actually were banking the people that were getting their land restitution funds and trying to ensure that only a small amount can be in cash and that most of the money would actually be invested. We also continue to increase the number of municipalities that are able to pay through the post office. One, it will increase our revenue, but most importantly, it will enable the municipalities to be able to collect because the payments can be made through the post office. We had also done a pilot with an HFC where we looked at the possibility of us actually them when they do the retail part actually do it through the post office so that rather than rushing on and doing other products, we can enable government to deliver through us where you find that in most instances there may be funds that exist in many departments, but they are not able to get them to the communities or to their beneficiaries, that we assist in that regard, and we continue to engage with the various departments to see how we can actually enable them, because we already have this infrastructure that we can make it easier for government to deliver services.
Just on the question of capital versus maintenance and operating costs, I think we, as the CEO said, we're playing a little bit of catch-up because we've only been profitable for around about 5 years now. And in the early years, those profits were very small. Obviously, when we were losing money, we had no money to spend on anything. We're now in the position where we can make investments in accommodation and rental costs and maintenance. But to give you some indication, our maintenance bill this year on our post offices is going to go up by 22%. So that's a significant investment in maintenance of our infrastructure. And our IT costs this year will go up by some 15%. So those are the two areas of the business that are growing. We're obviously keeping tight control of it. We don't want to get it too high. We just before the economic crisis up, you mentioned about the cost to income ratio narrowing. Our target was to get profit rates up to around about the 10% mark to deliver sufficient cash to make investments in both CAPEX and in operating costs as well. Obviously, with the economic situation is at the moment, we haven't had that luxury, but we anticipate a recovery next year, and our target still is over the long term to get back up to that 10% mark. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a balancing act, but I think given the constraints in which we operate, we're okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I'd like to add my vote of thanks for what was a very good presentation. And I've been partially covered by both Susan and Julie Killian. I just want to also go back to that map. I noticed that sort of a sparsely populated and very large province, the Northern Cape, has been listed as having reached that target. 121 existing outlets and a zero shortfall. And I see that it ties in with the 1 per 10,000. Do you not factor in density issues the same way you do in Gauteng? And if so, how do you do that? My second question is about the subsidy, which you're about to lose. But I noticed that 250 million rands of it is devoted to IT infrastructure and quite a few sub-programs underneath there. Why is it coming out of the subsidy, which, you know, as you said, the business shouldn't be benefiting from? And also, since you've actually listed it as one of your strategic objectives under this innovation, I think it was on page 4, the review of delivery mechanisms, and also you've just said that, you know, you're set to increase the budget by 50%. What's going to happen when that subsidy comes to an end, and why isn't it already a line item? Thank you.
I will answer the density issue. In fact, there are two ratios we use in calculating. We have the 1 to 10,000 that we indicate, and the other ratio is that the coverage should be a radius of 5 kilometers. Now, in the Northern Cape, as you refer, when we say a shortfall that has come out, is because we have more than 121 outlets currently in the Northern Cape. and it's taken into consideration is that because in sparsely populated areas, the 1 to 10,000 doesn't quite work. So you need a coverage in a particular one, and then we apply the 1 to 5 kilometers. Okay. Next.
Referring to the questions on subsidy, it will be coming to an end, unfortunately. I think while we're still projecting of around about 300 to 400 million rand worth of subsidy coming through over the next couple of years, which will assist us in the legacy issues which I referred to earlier. Not only from the physical infrastructure where we didn't have the money to spend on physical infrastructure, but also on IT. Our systems do require upgrading, when I say the business shouldn't benefit, what I meant was it shouldn't become dependent on it. But we do use the subsidy to improve efficiencies across our organisation. And if you look at things like rural connectivity, post offices that cannot be connected because they're in rural areas, satellite links, that sort of technology is very, very important from an investment perspective to actually bring those rural offices online with all those benefits that brings.
What, do you have a plan for when the subsidy comes to an end? And obviously your resources narrow slightly, you're going to be sort of more highly dependent on your profit margins. What's the plan after that happens?
If we look at the business itself, it's generating around about 500 million rand worth of cash per annum from the profitability, and that is projected to grow over the next few years. The subsidy will be phased out and will come to an end. The idea is now, whilst we still have it, to make investments in those areas that we need, so that by the time the subsidy comes to an end, the major capital investments will have been made for the foreseeable future. So that's, we see this as a way to actually get improve the efficiencies and a window for us to make those necessary investments. And I think if you look at it, it's becoming less. If you look at our subsidy versus our own operating cash, probably 60 to 70% of our investments have come out of our own cash we generate out of our business, with the remaining coming out of subsidy. So that was actually declining anyway. I think what we do need to have a discussion on is, as the CEO has mentioned, is the universal service element of our business, whether we need to develop a funding model for that very much smaller. We can manage the capital investment side of it, but the USO costs are going to become punitive over a period of time. So I think that's the discussion that we need to have going forward. Thank you.
As to that, this is what we emphasize, that it's not just a subsidy cut. It's a policy, you know, discussion. So it goes further than that, because we can look at various ways going to borrowing, but the critical issue is who services the backlog, and particularly in terms of USO.
Chairperson, that is called an unfunded mandate.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. On page 24, the second slide, you raised the issue of cost containment. Now, my question: how does that affect the quality of service delivery in terms of those measures? Secondly, I think colleagues have asked a lot of questions around the slides, where slide 12 and 13. But my question or my request is that if you give us the number of outlets, I think it's very important also to give us the number of outlets that are there but that are not functioning or are being vandalized and things like that, rather than just giving us the number of outlets that are there. But also we need also to get the status of such outlets. Around the issue of labor brokers, I think we need to get a final report, because you've just raised an issue that you need to do an audit and things like that, and also I think we'll need also to get that final report. But also as a committee chair, we need also to do our own oversight and also engage labor sector here within the industry, and just to check and see in terms of it. But my bigger question is that you are trying to manage a thing of labor brokers. But what will happen if the government decide to do away with labor brokers and in terms of your service provision, you need this casual labor and casual staff, then what is your forward thinking? How will you address that? How will you balance that in the near future? Thank you.
The cost containment processes, in fact, when we first dealt with them, we looked, and I think just to go through the process of how we dealt with the issues of cost containment. Activities that were geared towards service delivery, activities that were geared towards new revenue generation and revenue generation in total were given priority. We then looked at the different levels and where what I call discretionary spend can be looked at were then taken into consideration, and we kept some of those issues. But further to that, we then decided that if people are going to have to travel, for example, it's not necessary for the CEO to be on business class. We are going to Cape Town. We get there. And how do we then take those issues? However, as I indicated, we also looked at saying there are operational requirements that people will have. And I use an example of people who have to go into the Duke River area to service the post office and others. If you look at the cost of petrol that has gone up, if you look at the issues where they would have to go through, for those particular ones, in fact, we then reviewed and increased it because it has an impact on people. Therefore, it takes out that. So as much as we cut somewhere, where it was necessary, we had to review it aligned to the realities and the cost factors that people have to go through. So that's what we have looked at. But we have looked at other smarter and innovative ways of how to do business rather than just going through the same processes that we have. So we manage the costs in such a way that on a weekly basis, all units across the country, we report, we go through that impact of service. We measure our service quality every week, and we go through those processes, and we need to understand. And the business unit heads and also the people managing on the ground will then come up and say, I have this other requirement. For example, as we expanded the social grant, in particular branches, there might be more people being registered for those who would capacitate that office because we know that there is a revenue generation activity that is happening within them. The list of functional outlets, I think what you can indicate is the channels. We can be able to send those reports because that indicates where we have rolled out, and because of some other connectivity and other issues, they are still waiting for either the satellite and others. We can send the report through to the members. I do agree with the fact that, if you allow me, that we will, through the board, present the final outcome of the audit and the other steps. But also have been indicated that the board has in fact asked us to go and be very forward looking, to say what alternatives are there, either doing this yourself, what other alternatives are there, and we are working on those things. And once we've gone through our processes and governance processes through the chair, we can update the committee on that chair. That is where we will get guidance from the board. Any questions?
Ms. Tony.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I'm fascinated by the fact that the CEO is here when you put your foot down, that what kind of style of reporting do you want? And I could see that you are listening attentively. And he has done a very good job of it. And by so saying, I'm trying to say, really, this is one strategic plan that I think I understand more than all the others that they have presented previously. I just want to ask a very simple question, but I think it's important for some of us to understand. When you talk about the corporate strategy on page 7, when you restructure the group into distinct business, I just want to know, do you really focus on the age difference there? Or you just put the group together of because I think there is a difference in absorbing some of the things they are taught when you are older and done to the younger people. And the other thing I wanted to know is the issue of you are reporting that you have expanded the address expansion in the informal settlement. That's where I'm concerned about. I can hear talking about the rural areas and all the other places. The informal settlement, you see my rural in Gauteng is informal settlement, and I'm very much concerned about whether you have managed to deal with the addresses there. Thank you.
Chairperson, may I at this point say, you know, we remain very indebted to the guidance that we get from the portfolio committee. And even sometimes it is harsh, I think it's realistic, and I think it makes us really be vigilant. And I think from my team, the board, being here is really worth it, because we know that we can deal with the issues that we have. For age difference, I always look at my executive team, and I say to them, we need young blood. When you look at the ICT, we require people who can do that. So I always ask them, any volunteers for? the ICT world is very fast and very young, but it is in fact very encouraging. You know, I was going to say through the chairperson and others, we really would like to invite the portfolio committee into the post office for a day. And I just indicated that we are going through graduation of people who've been in the post office, some who got APEX, others who got RPL, and others who, and they speak about their experiences, and people who are in fact maybe in the later years of life, who have gone on an ICDL training, who now can use a computer, and what it exposes them to, I think it's beyond the issues that we deal with. And I think for me, it's always very heartwarming when we go through that. So for us, when we develop people because of the skill requirements that they have in terms of the job that they require, and we take it from that perspective. On address expansion, I should do say, honourable member, that we did get better send out in trying to do our address rollout in informal settlements. And from the burnout, I will explain what would happen. We'd go into an informal settlement before it is proclaimed, and the municipality or local government will then move it to another area. Now, the approach that we have taken together with the municipalities is that we will roll out in proclaimed areas. However, where we had already rolled out in the informal settlement, even if they are not proclaimed, we still deliver to those areas. When they do move, we will then move into the proclaimed area. So we stopped it at some point, but where we had already rolled out, we kept it and we kept the service. But as we go forward, we now go only to the proclaimed areas because of the movement and the planning around the local government that we really need to align ourselves to.
Trisha, you got one follow-up question?
One follow-up, Chairperson. On page 7, you know, you talk about all the strategic pillars. Now, it's good and well that we've discussed today. We appreciate your report, but the work doesn't end here for the committee. So I would like to know if you can give us your business plan and your operational plan. This is the strategy. That will assist us a great deal as members of parliament to monitor.
So when you come back next year, we can say, but this is what you told us in your strategic plan, but in your business plan, it was not covered. Thanks, Jefferson.
Right. I think we have exhausted all the questions. One more, all right?
Thank you, Chairperson. This is only a small nitty-gritty thing, but you remember last year I asked you about Toekoms Ras near Rangfontein. Can you tell me what's happening there?
It's one of the areas which we're looking at the possibility of establishing an outlet. We have not yet really identified a suitable place. But it's in our plan to try to find a suitable place for an outlet.
Right. Thank you, Chair. As a non-executive director in the board, I really appreciate the discussion, particularly around the issue of the subsidy, and more so that based on the new legislation that the chairperson started with, that we were able to report on this strategic plan as per that. So I'm looking forward really to that as you exercise the powers of the new legislation that allows you to do budget adjustments in relation to the discussion we just had on subsidies, we may see a budget adjustment for the post office to the positive, especially in the light of the discussion on subsidy cuts. Thank you.
Just to follow up, Chair, and closing from our side, we really would like to indicate that part of the progress that we have, or the progress that was presented today, has been to a greater extent from the support of the Minister and Deputy Minister and the team. We want to just indicate that we really have had great support, and particularly, I mean, we've run through as a board, through full board, every time, you know, we've got a vacancy, it's filled immediately. So that has really assisted us in terms of moving forward with the work that we have done. But just in closing, to say that we've presented to you a budget and plan in very difficult times, but we are very proud to say we've also, in these difficult times, ensured that we strengthen our balance sheet. We've moved year by year to assets that have grown so much, 7% increase, I think, in this financial year, to about 9.6 billion. And this is really something we're very proud of. So with all the cost-cutting measures, we're making sure that we're dealing with a very sound business that our country can be proud of. Thank you so much. And please, let's get the deal through.
Members in the leadership of SAPO, I think generally my sense is that the committee is reasonably satisfied with the presentation that has been put before it. It's a clear indication of what the expenditure trends will be, how you're going to get your revenue, and what the profitability will be. This is a successful company by any standard. We would want, I think, documents. Patricia has asked for the operational plans and the, what was the second one? The business plan. Mr. Mkhize has asked for, I think, additional information on labor broking and how we're going to deal with that. And I think it was also he had asked for your infrastructure report and your maintenance plan. Am I right in saying that? Is that what you specifically asked for? And then the last thing is this issue of the subsidy. I mean, if the executive management and the board feel very, very strongly that there's still going to be a need for this in the outer years, my sense is there for the 2 years, am I right? But in the outer year, what will be the amount? And can you, in very, very soon, next 2 or 3 days, actually prepare a motivation for us? It's difficult for the committee to say, look, we think the subsidy should be maintained. If Treasury comes to us or the budget committee comes to us and says, look, for what? And then we said, yeah, but actually they just asked for that money. But if you can give us a sound and clear rational motivation, it's something that we might want to include in our report to say that this matter must be reviewed in the MTF cycle. So it's, I think it's worth taking that up. From my side, I'd like to thank the team for a very good presentation, very crisp and concise. So thanks very much. For the members, I'm going to ask you to stay for a few minutes. It will be a closed discussion. So if all the other visitors can leave, there's a matter that we should be informed about for a few minutes.